Welcome, everybody. It's Elaine. It is Thursday, September 28th. It's the 3 p.m. Eastern Time PSS call. We're going to be talking 2017. We're going to be talking about taking AIM today. So we're sort of back to the original beginning of the curriculum where we sort of start over and learn new. And so we're going to play with taking AIM a little bit today in terms of both theoretical and actually doing the work of it. So it's an interesting sort of twist on it today. And we were just starting with celebrations when I remembered to turn on the recording. So, Maya, back to you, because this is an epic celebration.
Yeah, this is pretty big. You want me to kind of go in detail a little bit?
What are you celebrating?
Well, I'm celebrating that last year we had a big conversation with my son who was in high school. He was a freshman last year. He's 14. About switching from a huge public high school to a nice private school where he would get a lot more attention and help with his executive functioning skills. And after a lot of discussion, he wanted to stay at his big school against, you know, the judgment of his parents. But we decided to let him stay because he seemed really motivated and that he was going to prove that he could do well there. So he's been at school a month, and he has now 4 A's and a B+. So he's doing more homework. I don't ask him about his homework. He took total charge of that. So I'm just pinching myself every day.
Right. It's just amazing. Well, and what I want to say is that it wasn't quite as simple as that. It was months of conversations and meetings and negotiation and a lawsuit with the school, and I mean we did private coaching around it, and I mean this was a very in-depth series of conversations that led to the decision, and he was part of that process, so it wasn't just
he
did a lot
stubborn.
Of work around it.
Yeah,
yeah, but look at the result, right?
Yeah,
got tenacious. Well, so remember, stubborn and tenacity are different sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Right? So whenever there's a challenge area, always look for what's the gift in it or the opportunity in it. I was just talking about this with my daughter today because she was really stubborn, but also, like, once she puts her mind to something, man, she does it. You know?
And I think he's even surprised.
Yeah, I bet he is. And it's going to get harder as the semester goes on and, you know, the work gets harder and all that. But to just keep reinforcing, celebrate the successes. And I would just encourage you to keep helping him see, you know, what's working for him. You did great with that. What did you do that worked for you? Keep focusing on the successes and helping him see what he did to be successful. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah, he just took over his homework. He doesn't, you know, I guess I was way too involved before, but he wasn't also, you know, showing initiative that he wanted to be involved, and now he's writing his homework down, and he just does it. I don't say time to do it, and so he's like a changed student.
Right, and what I'm saying to you is it's great that you see that, and I want you to help him see that, because if you tell him that, he won't learn it. But if you ask him the question and help him see, I took ownership of it myself, help him figure out what his strength was in it, that will click for him differently. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Pam, what about you? What are you celebrating this week?
I was just thinking about this just because it's very early here and I'm just struggling with coffee and half asleep. Well, my daughter started a job nannying a few months ago, and as I was thinking about, you know, what I was celebrating this morning, I noticed I've got some cash sitting on the coffee table next to where I'm sitting, and it's $100 that she gave me last night, which she borrowed some money when she went to Europe earlier in the year, traveling, and I was just looking at this cash and thinking, you know what, she's paid me back something like 70% of it. And every week when she gets paid, I don't even have to ask her for the money. She just thinks of it herself, or I get a message from the bank saying that, you know, the money's gone into my account. And, you know, for someone who has cancer and all this kind of stuff with ADHD. The fact that I haven't had to remind her of this responsibility and she just does it. I really think it's something worth celebrating, as well as the fact that, you know, she's got this highly responsible job of working for two families where she looks after their really small children who are only 4 and 19 months old, and the families just adore her, the kids adore her. So I think it's amazing and very much something to celebrate.
That is awesome. That is just, yeah, that she's stepping in and she's owning it and not being reminded. You know, what comes up for me as you're saying that, Pam, is that, you know, it's not that these issues go away. The whole point is that they're learning to manage them. You know,
yeah.
They're learning to take responsibility and manage themselves. And
yeah, so I don't know how. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I don't know, you know, how she's, because I know when she got this job, I was thinking, oh, I was quite a little concerned about the age of the kids, especially the youngest. And I'm thinking, you know, my distractible daughter, how's she going to go looking after toddlers? But she is managing it. She finds ways and she looks after the kids and they adore her. So,
I bet.
You know, her. And they're long days. You know, this week she did 3 10-hour days looking after, you know, 2 small kids. And as we know, that's tough.
Yep. Gives her a whole new appreciation for you, too.
Yeah, exactly. She was funny last night when she went to the park with the kids yesterday. And she said, you know, I have to do everything all myself and it's full on and I barely get to sit down. And we're at the park and I needed a tissue to help with Ned. And I asked the little girl if she could go to the bag and get me a tissue. And this little girl rolled her eyes and said, oh, I can't believe I have to do everything around here. Anyway, of course,
I bet it was hard to bite your tongue.
I know. I thought I just can't. I don't think I can resist this. Anyway, it was funny.
That's great. That's fabulous. All right, well, let's move on. We're going to take aim, and then we're going to talk about taking aim. And then at the end of the call, we may look back and see whether we're still taking aim at the same place or whether it's something different. And we'll talk a little bit more about it in a minute, but I want to make the distinction here between taking aim as a, you know, sort of a method that we do and sort of when it's a strategy and when it's a philosophy, right? So part of our philosophy is taking aim, is making sure we're clear what we're working on. But it's also, you know, a really essential piece of a bigger strategic puzzle. Like whenever we're trying to create any change, it's always more effective when we start by getting really clear on what the change is that we want to see in the first place. And where we tend to make mistakes or run into trouble is when we take aim on the strategy itself rather than the change that we want to see. So so let's start by taking aim for each of you and sort of what's the change, given you're both in a sort of a good place, things are going well, fun celebrations, independence happening, where do you want to focus? What's the change you want to see next?
Well, for me, I guess, although I'm very thrilled about how he's taking responsibility and working really hard in school, the other area where we've still had a lot of challenges is anger management, and I guess when I think about it more, it could be controlling triggers, although not totally sure what the difference is there. But we have made some progress where we have this code word Bob. It's like back off, bud. But he'll say Bob when he starts to get angry. Like we came up with that code word, can you just say Bob? Because sometimes we don't know that what we're doing is getting you angry. So he said it.
Right.
And yeah, he's been saying it, but last week I guess I kept wanting to finish my sentence. I was talking to him, and I could tell he was getting irritated. And in retrospect, I should have walked away, but he said Bob 2 or 3 times, and then he just, you know, blew a gasket. And So then we tried to talk about what Bob meant the next day, because I wanted him to realize that I at least want to finish my sentence. It's not like I, you know, turn around and run out of the room as he says Bob, which he was saying, you have 13 seconds to leave when I say Bob. And, you know, so we are kind of, I was trying to explain to him that that wasn't really what it meant, you know, for me. And so I guess, you know, it's positive that he's starting to realize when he gets mad, and I guess I have to, you know, stop what I'm saying sooner. But I think there's also some give and take, where it's kind of always his way or the highway. If he gets mad, it's always somebody's fault because you didn't do this. So I guess, is that, would that be taking aim on triggers or anger management? I'm not clear exactly, you know, what.
Well, it's a good question. There are a few pieces of it. So I first of all, I hear two places, potential places to take aim. One is to help him with his with continuing to manage the triggers, right? Anger management. Anger is what happens when the trigger's not managed, right? So if you get at the source of the trigger, then you're less likely to have anger. So one area is sort of focusing on him and understanding his triggers, you know, continuing to come up with ways to manage the triggers. A second area for him might be on, once he gets triggered, how does he handle it then, right? So Bob is preventive. What's the responsive way of handling it if he does get angry and lose it? And then the other place to focus here, Maya, that I hear is for you to focus on your own behaviors. How do you handle it when he's at a trigger point and you're still pushing him and having a point, right? So that you want to get across. So what's your responsibility in it? And that's a completely different place to focus, and a place where you have a lot more control. So which of those, so that's sort of three different areas I hear. Which of those feels most resonant for you or something else?
I think understanding his triggers and managing them, because I realize sometimes I say too much and I've really been working on leaving. But sometimes I feel like if he gets mad and I walk away, you know, that's his mom, right? But other people that he deals with in life are not going to walk away. So it's kind of like I'm controlling the anger, and he's not, you know, taking the responsibility and the ownership of controlling his anger. It's just me, like, walking away.
Well, so that one sounds more like of handling the anger, channeling the anger when he does get triggered.
Yeah, well, I'm like cognizant and really trying to leave when he gets mad, but I just want to work on, I guess, understanding his triggers. If I kept a list, I mean, it seems like, there's some things that happen over and over for sure, but there's a lot of new things. It's kind of like when he doesn't get what he wants, he just, you know, he'll start to get angry.
Right, but here's the clarification I'm trying to make, right? So one issue is raising his awareness to what's triggering him in the first place. The other is helping him manage dealing with his anger once he's triggered. Those are actually two separate things, and you're blending them, and I think it will help you to separate them. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, so I would choose dealing with anger once triggered.
Okay, great. And does that feel clearer than, well, is it trigger? Is it? I mean, does that get clearer for you? And it's like, okay, once he's triggered, what's he going to do?
Yeah, I think the raising awareness of triggers, sometimes he'll say, you know, you do this over and over, or my brother does this over and over. So I think he knows some things that trigger him. But I guess our biggest problem for, you know, peace in the house is dealing with his anger once he's triggered, because he really is out of control.
Right. Okay, fabulous. So how to handle things, help him handle things better once he gets triggered. Right?
Yes.
All right, and I know somebody else has joined the call. Who else is here with us? Someone else is here. Is it Brian? Are you here? Pamela, Maya, can y'all still hear me? I just want to make sure I'm heard before, because I know somebody else has dialed in and I need to. Okay.
Yep.
I just want to be.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody on the call who isn't supposed to be on the call And there's someone here from Kansas. One more time, is there somebody here? Because I'm gonna have to disconnect you. It could be Mary, maybe. Who's here from Kansas? I hate to disconnect somebody, but I can't continue the conversation if I don't know who's on the call. Fair? You might, if you're muted, press star 7 to talk. If you have muted yourself, maybe that would do it. Okay, hate to do it, but sorry, I'm going to have to disconnect. Okay, I'm back. So, Pamela, what about you? I have to say, in all the years I've done this, I don't think I've ever had to disconnect somebody from a call. It was weird. But I just don't know who it is. So, Pamela, where are you taking aim this week?
Well, the area that I'm still struggling a little with is the driving lessons and the driving practice that we need to do. And
yep.
Lauren getting agitated pretty much whenever I give her direction. So, and as she gets more experience, as an example, she starts to get, you know, stuff that, you know, we all do, which kind of makes it all a bit challenging. Like, you know, the other day when we're driving, she's got one hand on the wheel. And, you know, that's a practice we all end up doing at some stage. But until she gets a license, when she passes her test, if she wants to pass the test, she actually needs to be building a habit of keeping both hands on the wheel, or she'll, you know, without thinking, she'll possibly do that in a test and she'll fail. But whenever I say something like put hands on the wheel, there's some reaction, or if I remind her about something, it generates, you know, this, you know, snapback and attitude, and it's just hard work.
The change you want to see is to improve the dynamic in when you're in the car together.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm saying that very specifically, improve the dynamic, because we don't know what that will mean in terms of strategy. Like, you know, we could take aim on designing with her, but that's really more the strategy.
Yep.
And the change you want to see is to not trigger each other in the car.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about taking aim. And these were good examples, and the example with you, Maya, was particularly helpful, I think. But both of them really are, because, you know, we have this tendency to want to take aim on either something that's too big, or to take aim on the strategy. And now, when we're taking aim, there really are two levels that it's happening. There's a macro level and a micro level. Both of you on the call have done private coaching, so you really have a sense of that macro level, which is the big issues we deal with, and then the micro level, which is, you know, the day-to-day specific stuff. Macro level might be improving your relationship with your child, or making a decision about a school change. Those are big picture issues. That's a place you have to take aim, and it's a big macro issue that we do it on. And then the micro issues are the kinds of things we deal with here in group coaching, where it's shorter time, we don't have as much time to really get into an issue, and so this is where we focus you in, and it's not just improving the relationship, but improving the relationship when, under what circumstances, it may not have been with your daughter Pam about just supporting her, but, you know, helping her when she was dealing with a particular class, you know, or supporting her through getting her through to the exam, you know, that was a couple of weeks away or something like that, right? So we target in taking aim for a couple of reasons. One, because it makes it more manageable. And when we make it more manageable, we set ourselves up for success. And when our kids experience the success, they're more likely to build on that success and want to take aim again on something else because it worked. And it doesn't feel as overwhelming for them or for us. So, you know, the classic example we use is we don't take aim on mornings, but we might take aim on a specific part, waking up, getting out of bed. You know, you used to have an issue with mornings. I remember, Pam, and we got really, really clear where and how and when to focus on sort of the waking up process was really important. And what the energy was like when she woke up would often set the tone for the day, right?
Yep, yep.
So narrowing in helps to reduce the overwhelm for us and for them, right? So we do this process of taking aim on both the big picture level and the narrow level, and we do it to help us and to help them, right? And I'm going to stop there and see what comes up for you guys in terms of thoughts or feedback or sort of, you know, both of you have had some experience in this realm and you've been doing it for a while. What's coming up for you? What thoughts do you have?
Well, I understand the distinction between the macro and the micro, but I still don't know, you know, what kind of a strategy I can use.
Well, the point of taking aim isn't to have the strategy. The point of taking aim is to get clear on what you're trying to achieve so that you can begin to figure out a strategy. But if you don't know what you're trying to achieve, then the strategy sort of goes into a void. And here's a great example with your son, right? What you were really trying to achieve ultimately was to get him to take ownership of his education, right?
Yes, yeah.
You were tired of running it for him, and you wanted him to step up. You never could have done that if you were taking aim on switching school. By looking at the issue the way you did and really exploring it and bringing him into the process, that's ultimately what cultivated his ownership. So the strategy came, and you ended up with a strategy you never would have expected by staying at the school.
Right. I guess I kind of let him take control because I realized that he wanted it so much, and it was like a motivator. I couldn't figure out, you know, he didn't seem to have any motivation last year. I don't know why, but I just, that was the only thing I could cling on to, is that he really wanted this and he was going to show us. So
right.
He was motivated, and now he's getting some good grades and he seems even more motivated. It's working and, you know, it's like really great. So I guess if I translate that into the triggers, then I guess, you know, he has to want to control his anger. Is that, or he has to take charge of it?
Mm-hmm. It's got to, if you tell him how to control his anger, is it likely to work?
No, but we discussed the Bob thing together. And I mean, I kind of said, well, what if we try this? Because, you know, I know you had mentioned like these code words when you're getting angry.
You said, what if we try, and you let him choose and say yes.
Right, right.
That's the difference between telling and coaching. Right?
Okay,
but let's pull back. Let's stay in the conversation for a second about taking aim, because I don't want to move totally into the particular place where you're taking aim. I want to stay in this sort of a little more theoretical conversation for another minute about what you're learning about this whole notion of taking aim, what works for you and what doesn't. Pam, step in and see what's showing up for you here, because you've been doing this for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah.
And I remember when you got to the point where you would start coming to coaching calls and say, okay, I know what I want to take aim on this week. So what do you understand now that you may not have initially?
I think being, you know, really focused on just one thing, one specific thing. I find it harder now because, you know, things are harder to focus now because we've moved past some of those things, which is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
right? But you know, as you work through those other things, the things get kind of more challenging in different ways. So, you know, being really specific on one thing really helped. And, you know, for example, on mornings I would find if I went upstairs with Lauren, bring her a cup of coffee before she woke up, things would be better. And that might be my strategy for that week or something, just to try and, you know, improve the vibe when she opened her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one like managing anger is such a challenging thing because it's such a big issue that cuts across so many different things. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, finding that little thing. And I'm struggling with, you know, taking aim right now on how I manage that in the car situation because, you know, I often have to say something pretty quickly.
Right.
And sometimes quite sharply, which, you know, the situation means that that's what I need to do. And it's not like there aren't many options. So, so being as specific as you can on one thing, which might seem like it's a really little thing, and that was one of the things I struggled with because there were so many things I wanted to change quickly. And one little thing, like coffee in the morning, I'm thinking, that's not enough.
Right. But it sort of segues you into other things. It helps you let go of other things that you can, right? Because
yeah.
And that's part of it, I think, for us. If I know that, if you know that you're really focusing your conversations right now, your direction and redirection on the car, or maybe your design with her on the car, whatever it is, that allows you to sort of lighten up in some other areas because you know that the real focus is what's important right now is to figure out how do we be together in the car.
Yeah. And in some ways, the car situation actually takes us backward in many ways. And by that, I mean, you know, I've learned to step back and let go in virtually every other area. But when you're supervising in a vehicle, you've got to get back into this much more almost controlling directive mode that I haven't been in for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And in that.
And that she's reacting to.
And she's reacting to, and I don't particularly like it either, but that's what I need to do to keep her safe and every other driver on the road safe.
Mm-hmm.
But she's reacting to me telling her what to do, and she's always struggled with being told what to do.
Right.
And it's an environment where you have to be told what to do. So,
here's what I would offer to you is there's a telling her what to do, and then there's going back to that, how do you do it? And so it may not be that it's not about directing, but it's about, you know, if you remember those four roles, right, you're transferring ownership. You go from directing to modeling to, you know, empowering to supporting. And it may be that she needs the redirection, but she may need you to do it in a way that still has her feeling empowered by it.
Yeah.
So the strategy we get to, you're taking aim on something very specific, which is, you know, how do we be in relationship with each other when she's driving in a car? Very, very tight, very targeted. And so then we go forward and we say, okay, where does that take us in terms of strategies? So and we have a fair amount of time. So why don't we do a little coaching? I think we might have time to do coaching for each of you around the particular topic. Does that work for y'all? Good with that?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Sure.
Okay. So, Pam, since we're in this conversation around the car, can we just continue with this for a minute?
Yeah, sure. And I can tell you something I tried that didn't work well, I think not long after the last call.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need to start with that. So
sure.
I think, you know, one of the areas...
I want you to tell me what has worked well first. Anything you've done that you feel like has been successful?
Well, I'm not really sure that anything I've tried has been particularly successful. I mean, she's getting more experienced, and because she's getting more experienced, then there's less tension generally, right? because she's getting things right more often, which is great, and that's the whole idea. But one of the things I was struggling with last time, which was, you know, probably about a month ago, she was taking too long to slow down. Does that make sense? Where she just wasn't braking early,
yep.
is a better way to describe it. And that's quite stressful. And I think one of the things we talked about was that I would try talking to her about how it feels like to be, you know, in the car and your perception as a passenger is different. So I tried to have this as a conversation with her, and it didn't go well at all. She, you know, she was triggered early and said, so you're telling me that being in a car with me is really stressful, and how on earth is that supposed to be? And, you know, that feels really bad about myself. And, you know, and I thought, well, this has gone really well.
Right. All right.
So I did try at one point saying, okay, at some point when we're driving, there will be times when I need to tell you to do something, and I'll need to tell you quickly. And this is before she actually started driving. And I said, and I know when I give you instruction, it annoys you. So do you have any suggestions for what I could do to direct you in that situation? And she basically said, look, if you've got to do it, then you've got to do it, but only do it if you have to. And that's where the issue comes in, right? Because my view of when I have to and her view of when I have to are completely different things. So, for example, when I tell her that she needs to brake earlier, she doesn't agree. Because, of course, she'll brake when she thinks she needs to, and that's the inherent issue. That her judgment is different to mine, and in this situation, mine is superior. That's why I'm the supervising driver, right? But that's the issue she's better at it, but she's still not great. So
what has worked in the past was you did try to do some design with each other around being in the car. What didn't work, it sounds like, was she actually didn't let you really design with her, you know?
No.
She sort of did. She said, when you have to, you have to, but she didn't actually say, okay, when you have to do it, do this, or don't hold on to the railing that way, or, you know, she didn't do anything that was actually constructive for you.
No.
Right. Okay. So
no.
You tried the design, and the downside was it didn't work.
Correct.
The
thing that worries me most of all, Elaine, is we have a fundamental disagreement on this judgment thing. And I worry about being in an emergency situation where she needs to immediately respond to my direction. And pretty much invariably when I've given her a quick direction, she takes too long to respond to that. And I worry about her not reacting to me, and it's actually urgent. Because sometimes that happens in a car.
So let me ask you a question. Can you, if you look at the time that you've spent in the car with her and look more recently to where you have been lately, right?
Yeah.
How often is it really urgent, and how often is it instructive for future reference?
I'd say 95% of the time it's instructive. Probably faster than urgent.
Okay. So if she and do you feel like you have that you make a distinction in your communication with her, whether in tone or energy, where she can tell the difference between instructive and urgent?
Yes, but she gets immediately triggered whenever my voice is sharp or raised, which happens in an urgent situation.
But that's only 5% of the time.
Yes.
Or I guess what I'm asking you, really frankly, is is it possible because you're worried about the future state that you may be sometimes overreacting to where she is now?
Yes, it is. And, you know, I've tried to pull back and trust that, you know, she will slow down in time.
Right.
So... you know, I try not to ask her to slow down unless I feel that it actually is quite urgent. And, you know, she's pretty good. It's just that she needs to learn to brake earlier.
Right. So I'm hearing two things. One is you're sort of taking aim on how you communicate with each other when she's driving. But really, the biggest issue is her braking.
Well, there's two issues. Her braking.
Okay, what are they?
And secondly, her braking and her failure to respond immediately when I give her an urgent direction. I probably need to make sure when I do that, I just pull back so it really is only urgent, so she's immediately obeying when there is an issue.
So really what you're identifying is two places to take aim.
Yeah.
One is this issue of you want to help her learn to slow down sooner, and the other is you want to, whether it's design with her or whatever, you want to feel confident that she's going to be responsive to you when it is urgent. And because you don't feel confident in that because of her reactivity, it may be making more stuff urgent than needs to be. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay. So first of all, there are two different places to have conversations with her about, or two different aspects of the conversation, right? And anything else coming up for you in this before we sort of move into? I mean, we know it's there's only so much you can do about activating the brain, but she's doing her stuff, and it sounds like she's alert when she's driving. That's not an issue, correct?
Yeah. Although she was quite distracted yesterday morning. Maybe she was tired when we drove to work in the morning. Her attention was not great, and that's the first time she's been like that, and there were just a few things where concentration was poor.
How did you handle that? How did you handle that?
Well, the first time, you know, she sort of struggled with this corner, and she'd done it the day before as well, and she didn't get triggered because, you know, there's nobody around, and it was just around the corner from our place, and she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I don't know why I've done that, and I've only done it today and yesterday." And she was fine with it, but I didn't make too big a deal of it because there was nothing that really happened. It was just that she wasn't, her attention wasn't great, and it was difficult to put a finger on the specifics of, this is the whole macro issue, the macro issue, right?
Right, exactly.
It's the attention. Yeah. So, I just couldn't really say anything other than get concerned about how do we deal with this. And I need to get her a follow-up conversation with her psychiatrist, and because she's not taking her medication at all at the moment. And I think it's a good opportunity to change medication because I think there's some, I don't know what the name might be in the US now, but there's one called Strativa or something, which is a non-stimulant. I'd like her to try that because, you know, she's been on Vyvanse and, you know, she doesn't like how it makes her feel.
So let me ask you a question. If this is an area where she, you're not in a crisis or anything, but there's sort of both of you recognize something's not going as well as she wants, as either of you want, right?
Yeah.
What's the opportunity to readdress the design on that particular area? To talk about what's working, what's not working. You know, to ask her what's going on for her. And let her come to the decision of maybe it's time to look at something different.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, what? I heard this aha, but what was it?
Oh, I was just thinking about, you know, an opportunity to talk to her, well, two conversations really, to talk to her about a medication. And she's agreed to go to the doctor, so that's fine. But also perhaps sit down and have a conversation with her about the car, in a calm situation around how we're going. It's been, you know, 45 hours now. How are we going? How do we need to change?
Yep. So shift it to what's working, what's not working, what needs to change.
Yeah.
Okay. So start her with her successes. Start her with what she's doing well. Start her with the progress she's made. Let her identify it. And then ask, okay, so what do you feel like's not working? And let her tell you, you're yelling at me, you're, you know, whatever it is, like just listen, right? If she doesn't bring up this particular thing in the morning, it gives you a space to add, I'm noticing that when you're not awake in the morning yet, that sometimes you don't feel as focused. Are you noticing that? Or something.
Right.
So that you want to keep asking it, not telling her, right? But that's an opportunity to let her sort of come to it, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, then you guys can both go to sort of what changes do you want to make. One of them may be going to see a doctor and talking about a different kind of med. Another may be you may, in this conversation, you can break down the difference between urgent situations and sort of just general direction, and try the design again. So, you know, when we started, you told me just tell me if you have to, but it doesn't feel like that's helping either of us. Can we try it again? What would be helpful for you? Right?
Yeah.
And I think it's okay to let her know and say, my concern is I think I may be making everything urgent because I'm afraid that you're going to be reactive to me when it is actually urgent. So I want to be able to communicate with you in a calm way so that you're not reacting, so that when I am urgent, you know it's serious. You know, it's sort of like that design.
Yeah.
You can count on me to stay calm and not get reactive, and I need you to respond to me when I'm urgent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So this is one of those great opportunities to rinse and repeat. It may not have worked great the first time. Go back and try it again. What part did work? What part didn't work? What do you do differently?
Yeah.
Because I would maintain it's still the right solution with her in this dynamic. It's just about making – you needed to get clear that really what's happening is you're afraid she's not going to be responsive when it is urgent.
Yes, that's right.
That's the place to design around.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Okay. Maya, what about you? So taking aim on once he gets triggered, how does he deal with his anger, right?
Right.
So the first question I have in that area is what's in it for him?
Well, I think that's a really good question because, we had this conversation last night at dinner. He doesn't get as angry with his family as he gets with, you know, his friends and everybody else. Like if he's at camp or whatever, he never raises to the same amount of anger. And I have come to the conclusion that this is, he's gotten what he wants this way. So it's kind of learned behavior that if he can like
see if I'm clear, because I think I got it backwards. What I think you're saying is he only behaved this way with his family. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I misunderstood earlier. Okay.
So this is behavior in the family.
Right.
I mean, it's good and it's bad because otherwise he definitely, you know, would have been in trouble in school a while ago and with other activities that he does on sports teams and whatever and camp. But he just, you know, he saves it for his family because he says that he lives with us and we annoy him so much. But I also think that, like what you just asked, what's in it for him is it's his kind of way to put pressure on my husband and I to get what he wants.
Okay. So what I love about what you just said is that the solutions are in the successes, right? So if you were to go to him and say, you keep your calm all so often. I noticed you keep your calm when so-and-so did this or so-and-so said that. What did you do? How did you learn to do that? or what strategy did you use, or whatever it is. If you can help him see where he's learned to keep his calm, then that's an approach that he might be able to apply to the family. But before you even get to that, the question is, this is you're trying to take aim on him changing his behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a difficult place to take aim, right? Someone else changing their behavior, particularly a kid that age. So
Right. What
is in it for him?
Well, I think, you know, what's in it for him is that he's sometimes been able to get what he wants by getting mad. So
well, I don't mean, no. That's what's been in it for him for getting angry. What's in it for him to stop behaving that way? That's the change you want to see. You want him to stop behaving like a spoiled brat.
Yes. So what would be in it for him? So
right now, what you're saying is it's worked for him.
Yes, and we tried motivators like, you know, I guess we need to go back to this, like you would get $5 a week for, you know, good behavior, which we could, you know, be a lot more specific, is controlling your anger when you start to feel it. Or I've started taking away the Xbox for 2 hours a night when he has these big blow-ups.
Okay, so before you get to the solution, let's get curious about what's going on. So what you're saying is you feel like when he doesn't get what he wants with his family, he blows up and uses it as a way to get what he wants. Is that correct?
Yeah, sometimes. Okay. I think that's, yeah. So that would be one thing, you know, dealing with his trigger, once he's triggered and helping him manage his anger. Sometimes I think it's really something else, you know, but he just gets out of control. But a lot of times, you know, we'll stick with the when he doesn't get what he wants.
Okay. But so what you're saying is that sometimes he loses control because there's something else going on and this is a safe place to lose control. Is that what
yeah,
you're saying?
Those are
your two areas. And so as you narrow in and take aim, you're taking aim here on how does he handle his anger when things don't go the way he wants? If you say when you don't get what you want, the 14, 15-year-old kid is just going to blow up. So watch the language there a little bit. But what you're saying is you want to take aim on helping him manage his anger or his reaction when things don't go the way he wants. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. So if you were to say that to him, if you were to go to him and say, kid, I'm you're doing so great in all these areas and so well in school and this and that, this is something we're sort of ready for you to get a handle on. Are you willing to start working on this? How do you think he would respond?
I don't think he'd want to do that.
Okay. Because?
Although I have kind of, it was interesting what Pam was saying about her daughter and driving, because he's 15 and he very much wants his license, and I'm dreading the whole driving with him thing. But I did bring into the conversation, you know, if you're not going to be able to handle your anger and be responsible, I'm not sure that we're, you know, ready to let you start with driving lessons and continuing down that path. So I did kind of, and he said, well, what does that have to do with it? And I was kind of, I started to say something about road rage, and he's like, oh, I would just, you know, flip him off. And I said, but, you know, for your dad and I to be comfortable. What?
That is the problem, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a whole, like, responsibility level of that I'm not, you know, comfortable with, that he's not, you know. So I kind of brought that in as an incentive, but it wasn't really like dangling the carrot. It's honest, you know.
No, it's great, actually. And I will tell you that worked with my 15-year-old a lot. Was that I very matter-of-factly set the stage for one of the requirements for being able to operate a vehicle is to be able to handle your anger. And if I can't give you, and this ties into what Pam was saying, if I can't give you a direction in an urgent situation without you reacting, then you're not going to be able to drive. And it's not a threat. It's just this is a different level of safety. And I was very matter-of-fact about it and very straightforward about it. But I really did set the stage very early to start that conversation, just like you're saying, by saying, this is, and that's probably a great way for you to tie into it. This is the next level of growth we see for you, because this is really essential for you to be able to get your license, and we know how important that is to you. So there's, remember I said what's in it for him?
Yeah. That's why I kept coming up with things.
That's what's in it for him. He wants to be able to drive.
And you know what he's doing? He's saying, well, I'm getting these good grades, so now I get a car. So I'm kind of hemming and hawing.
That is one of many, many things that you need to be responsible for. And you're doing an amazing job with that. You keep acknowledging that. And this is the next area for you to work on. This is probably the biggest obstacle for you to learn to get a handle on to be able to drive. And we're really proud of you that you've gotten to this point where you can do this. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you've actually answered the question, right? If the question was what's in it for him, he has something he wants to be able to do, and you have an absolutely legitimate reason to tie it to this goal that you're taking aim on, which is helping him learn to manage his anger when things don't go the way he wants.
Yeah, well, I did think that made sense. I mean, it is like mainly
brilliant.
In the house. But I think, you know, it could happen. It could happen on the road. People have this road rage. They get an accident. You know, he does, you know, it's legitimate. I doubt it would happen, but I was kind of like
looking for some kind of motivator. There are two places. One of them is road rage for other people. The other is, as Pam has been saying, is teaching him how to drive means he's got to be able to take direction from you without being reactive, period.
Well, my husband will be doing the driving.
Well, from you to either of you two, whatever. But you've got to be able to direct him and redirect him and tell him to do things without him being reactive. And so learning to manage his emotions when it doesn't go his way is an essential component to that. You've got the connection, right?
Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know if he's really bought into that, because he said, well, that's just road rage, and, you know, that's not really, I don't have that problem. But
so
I guess
I
need
to help him buy into it, right? He's not going to buy into it until you make that the condition, right? And I don't mean in a threatening way, but, like, if you go to him and say, this is something, we think you've made so much progress, this is the next area that we think you're ready to work on. Are you willing to take this on and start working on it? You still want to give him ownership, and you still want to give him engagement to say yes, to choose it. But the car is a really good reason for him to say yes to it. And then you negotiate the issue of how do you handle it? What do you do when you need to manage your anger? How can you calm yourself down when you get triggered? But before you get to those solutions, because the tendency is to say, okay, well, here are some strategies you can use. You can count to 10, and you can go outside and play basketball. And the tendency is to jump into structure, to solution. But what matters for him, and what he's really demonstrated to you in the last several months, is what matters for him is to have a reason. He's got to be bought in and own it.
Yeah. So I guess I just keep talking about every time he brings up the car, and, you know, just say that, are you willing to start working on your anger? Because, you know, this is
I would not bring it up. I would not wait for him to bring up the car. I would be proactive, Maya. I would go to him and say, you know what? You've been doing so great, and things are going so well. This is the next area that we think you're ready to focus on. And this is really essential, because we know how important it is to you to begin to get ready to get your license. are you ready to focus on this? I wouldn't do it in a reactive way when he brings up driving, because he's just going to get defensive if you do that.
Mm-hmm. So say, are you willing? Yeah, and then just ask him, are you willing to start working on this handling, you know, your anger? Or when,
right,
what,
and if
what
he says no, it's like, okay, that's fine. Let me know when you are, because that's really a critical component to you, to our confidence in your ability to drive a car. And let it go. Let him come back to you with it. Don't try to convince him. Don't try to get the last word. If he says no, say, okay, that's fine. We just want you to know that that's what we're going to be looking for as a fundamental piece for you to be able to get your license, is you got to be able to manage anger effectively.
Yeah, and that, I think, if I say that, like I did say that, then there's kind of like this question that I've always had is, you know, to what degree is his explosions kind of manipulative? Or to what degree is it that, I mean, I know to some extent he really can't control it, but I feel like sometimes he, you know, he does go into that, like, higher level throwing things and swearing because he's just, like, that's what he thinks will work. Like, he's throwing the whole kitchen table, you know, at it to get what he wants.
And he's old enough and capable of learning to stop that and change his reaction. He's not going to change his reactivity until he has a motivation and a reason to, until he makes the decision to start trying to curb that behavior. Up until now, he's had no reason to curb it. And so you're
right,
giving him a reason, and then you're going to have to wait for a minute for him to come back to you and say, yeah, I'm ready to do it. But it's not that he can't learn to control his anger. From what I know of you, and I've known you for a while, so I don't think I'm talking out of turn. It's not that he can't; it's that he hasn't decided to do that yet, to take on that challenge yet. And once he decides to take on that challenge, then he's going to have to learn some skills and some strategies and some approaches. But until he sets the intention to do it in the first place, you can throw strategies at him all day long. But he's not.
Yeah, and. Right, right. And another step I thought of is, you know, getting him to see this therapist, but he won't go, you know, so that I thought we can now really work on this anger management. And
you can't, don't go to the structures for how he works on it yet. Start by getting his buy-in. Give him a reason to do it and have him come back to you and say, yes, I'm ready. But your tendency, Maya, is to jump to the solution. And what I'm trying to hold you to here and encourage you to do is to step back and start with the intention, taking aim, setting the intention, and getting his buy-in to it, giving him the motivation, the reason for it, and getting his buy-in. Because you can't change his behavior. He's the only one who can.
Okay. So I think
we're going to stop there because we're a little over time, and I think it's a great place to sort of stop and say, what are you taking away and what do you want to commit to? So wrap that up for yourself here. What are you taking away? What's your aha?
Well, my aha is that, you know, I can use this, I guess. It's not really using it, but I can use this this motivation for wanting to drive to, you know, get his buy-in, to see if he really will work on controlling his anger when he's triggered.
Yep. Great. You've actually identified his motivation, or a potential motivation for him, but it's probably a likely one. And all I will say to you is be patient, because he may say no at first, and just be matter-of-fact and say, okay. If he says no, let it go. Just hold the bar that's what's going to be required, and whenever he's ready, it's fine with you, and he will come back to you.
Okay, yeah,
he will.
Does that
make sense? He
will. He will.
If you decide, if the two of you and Kevin, if you and Kevin get together and say, this is it. In order for him to drive, he's going to have to manage his anger. And he's going to at least have to start the process of agreeing to try to manage his anger, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're clear on that and you communicate it without judgment, he'll come back to you. You just got to be clear.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Pam, what about you? What do you? Well, so Maya, so what do you? What action do you want to commit to, if any?
I'm going to have a conversation with him this afternoon about, you know, are you, we did talk about driving, we talked about, you know, managing your anger, and I do think what works with him is kind of like the little eyedropper, just kind of say it and then not really keep talking about it if he doesn't want to, and then just bring it up in a few more days, and because he keeps talking about, you know, this friend has a car and this, I mean, he's talking about the driving every day, so I think he will probably... Yeah, I think he'll want to start the conversation.
Brilliant. Cool. Well done. Pam, what about you?
I think the aha for me, as we've talked, is, you know, when I said that I've kind of moved back into this directive situation, and I think I've probably, in opening the door, you know, it's nice to be able to direct people again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably a good opportunity to remind me that I need to step back and let her own it. And now that she's got, you know, 45 hours of experience, she's at that, she's not at that sort of basic level anymore where I have to direct her about everything. She's now in the, she's got the skills, she just needs to practice and build them. So it's a good opportunity for me to sit down and talk to her and say, you know, I know you and I know you want to be a safe, responsible driver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we've got the basics.
The vision.
How do we go about doing this and how can I help you do that?
Brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah.
Back to level three, that you're jumping right back to that phase three of parenting instead of phase one.
Right? Yeah.
You remember those. That's brilliant. And what I would also offer to you is just when all else fails or you can't remember how to do it, just ask questions.
Just
ask questions. Okay?
Yeah.
You got it. Great. All right, everybody. I think we're going to call it a wrap for the day. And interesting, really interesting conversation about taking aim and the different ways that we do. And even when we thought we were specific at the beginning, we both of you came back to narrow in even more specific, right? And the more targeted you get on taking aim, the more effective it can be. And the other reminder, Pam, is that when it doesn't work, sometimes we rinse and repeat. We figure out what worked, what didn't, and we go back and we try it again.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well done. Have a great week, everybody, and we will talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.